Hello, everyone. Hello, Justin. Hello, me. We are here, and it is somehow November 2025 already. And it's quite crazy at the moment in my life, Justin, how quickly things are going, and that we're saying it's November. It's pretty shocking to me. Anyway, here we are. It's November 2025. And we have an amazing source bought by you, Justin, for us today called Making the Implicit Explicit. And I feel completely excited by it. And not that I, you know, sometimes I arrive here and think, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what this is. I don't feel like I know exactly what this is. But what I do know is that the conversation about this that Jonah Platt has written or said, I think he may have said it, it just makes me feel hopeful about the world. And that is a glorious feeling. So thank you, Justin, for bringing this. And I don't know what to say, and I don't know where we're going to get to. I just know that I'm excited about the way that this is framed and what we might say to each other. So I want to say welcome to everybody, and welcome to you, Justin. Welcome to both of us in our ongoing conversations in Turning Towards Life, outside of Turning Towards Life. And just to acknowledge that I think Turning Towards Life for us, Justin, is a huge big part of like how we are, who we are to each other in all the other parts. And I really appreciate the ongoingness of it as a big, big exercise in making our own implicit explicit to one another, and how powerful that is in connecting us together. So thank you for being a person who makes your implicit explicit, and that you let me make my implicit explicit, whatever mess that is and however hard it is and however lovely it is, that we're doing that all the time. And thank you for knowing this source exists and bringing it here today. It's really wonderful. And welcome, everybody. Welcome. We're so happy that you're here and we're here.
Well, thanks for all of that, Lizzie. What a great beginning. It's lovely to feel beginning with you. And hello, everybody. I think I should say, for anyone who's joining us afresh, because we know that this podcast spreads not because we do the things that the algorithm asks. In fact, I think we're probably quite deliberately unalgorithmic, Lizzie. We don't do all the like the quick hits and the buzzwords or anything, because this is a real conversation. So mostly people find us because somebody says, hey, go and listen to this. That we're going to read this source, I'll read and then you'll read, Lizzie, and we'll let it settle in us and start to change us. And then we'll speak in a very unhurried way and find out what comes in between us, between you and me and the source and inside us, and something always unfolds, some depth and some new wonder and ways of seeing unfolds every time. And this is the 421st time that we've done this. So we've seems to work in that way. But I also wanted to follow up what you were saying to say, I know and we know that there are those of you who completely wonderfully listen alone. And then there are those of you who bring this into conversation with other people, who listen and then use the source to talk with others, which I really want to encourage. Because like you said, Lizzie, this source we're about to read, I'm bringing it this week because you and I have been in a conversation that has really taken the ground of years of talking and listening and making explicit with one another, the kind of depth and mutuality and trust and care for one another that evolves in talking. That means we can be in a conversation that I think if we had not been doing this, we would be less well resourced to talk and listen to one another in the way that we need to at this point in our lives. So it's a marvelous thing, actually, this practice. So I'm sort of bringing my joyful encouragement to everyone in the world to practice in this way, to have material sources that you can bring into the midst of a relationship and see what unfolds. And that is what you get to do also if you join our Turning Towards Life live program, which we're a couple of months into the first season of at the moment, but it next opens again in March. So if you are interested in joining us for a community of practice around this, you can already find out about it on the Turning Towards .life website, and you can join our mailing list and you can support us there, and you can follow a link to Third Space and everything we do around coaching there. But you can find out about this program because, as we're finding out, I think, Lizzie, is it's quite a thing to be in a community of people who are practicing together in this way. We learn so much by doing this together. So here is the source for this week. As you said, Lizzie, it's from Jonah Platt. It's from his podcast. His podcast is called Being Jewish with Jonah Platt. And you said it was something that Jonah had written or spoken. He definitely spoke it because that's how I've got it. But he probably wrote it because it's really thoughtful. So I suspect he wrote it and then he read it and he said it. And we're going to do the same. And I want to say a very particular thank you to Jonah, who's one of those people who is bringing such a thoughtful presence to the world. And I think this piece just exemplifies that. And it goes like this. It's called Making the Implicit Explicit. To achieve clearly understood communication in our relationships, personal, professional, casual, romantic, online, every level of life, it is critical that we remind ourselves to make the implicit explicit. That's the idea. Whatever we assume to be obvious, be it our emotional state, the purpose of an event, or the location of a stapler, we must teach ourselves to assume that it actually is not and therefore must be stated out loud if we're going to be understood. Why is this important to do? Because the literal opposite is true. What is most obvious to us is generally not obvious to other people. And in fact, they're often making a totally different and wrong assumption than the one you also wrongly assume they're making. Why does this happen? Well, there are several cognitive biases at work here. Primarily, there's what's called the curse of knowledge. Once we know something, it becomes difficult to imagine what it's like not to know it. So we overestimate how obvious our thoughts or intentions or explanations will be to others. And then there's the closely related illusion of transparency, where we overestimate how clearly our internal states, our emotions, thoughts, our sense of morality are visible to others. They're not. And last, naive realism, where we assume our perceptions of reality, of what's obvious about the world, are shared by all. These misalignments happen constantly in our interpersonal lives, and they lead to resentment, misunderstanding, conflict, and harm. I think at times there are also certain common resistances to being explicit. One is a sense of, well, if you really loved me, you would already know this about me, which is an understandable way to feel, but is really a failure to communicate. Another may be a sense of self-respect or maybe self-preservation that warps into a kind of peremptory and self-defeating resentment. Why should I have to make something explicit just to give you an understanding about me that you hadn't bothered to ask for? And the answer to that is, if a greater understanding would be a positive outcome, however it's arrived at, why not just take the responsibility to ensure it arrives? There's also, and I think this is the one that has most prevented me from making the implicit explicit as it pertains to my views, this is Jonah's views, on certain public issues, is the sense of not wanting to play the game, of not wanting to debase myself in order to pass someone else's morality test. And also the question of what does this really change? And yet, if playing the game and taking the test opens a door to greater understanding, a door through which perhaps more understanding can then travel, though that otherwise might have remained closed, that may in fact be change enough to make the enterprise worthwhile. So, if you've got questions for someone in your life, ask them. Expect that they have questions for you too. Preempt them. Make the implicit explicit. Talk to each other. Talk to each other.
Oh, thank you, Justin. I think I'm going to read the last five sections of this. I think at times there are also certain common resistances to being explicit. One is a sense of, well, if you really love me, you would already know this about me, which is an understandable way to feel, but is really a failure to communicate. Another may be a sense of self-respect or maybe self-preservation that warps into a kind of peremptory and self-defeating resentment. Why should I have to make something explicit just to give you an understanding about me and you haven't even bothered to ask for? And the answer to that is, if a greater understanding would be a positive outcome, however it is arrived at, why not just take responsibility and ensure that it arrives? There's also, and I think this is the one that has most prevented me from making the implicit explicit as it pertains to my views on certain public issues, is the sense of not wanting to play the game, not wanting to debase myself in order to pass somebody's morality test, and also the question of, what does this really change? And yet, if playing the game and taking the test opens a door to a greater understanding, a door through which perhaps more understanding can then travel through that otherwise might have remained closed, that may in fact be change enough to make the enterprise worthwhile. So if you've got questions for someone in your life, ask them. Expect that they have questions for you too. Preempt them. Make the implicit explicit. Talk to each other. Talk to each other.
I love this. And one of the things I love about it is so joyful to read. I just want to talk about what it's like to read Jonah's words, actually. I mean, there's something really fierce about it because he's talking about something I actually think, and Liz, you and I have been experiencing this week and having another conversation. I actually think this is how the world changes. I mean, it's really, really important. And it is lovely to read something that is so joyful and playful and provocative all at the same time. And this is 3 days of talking, I think, just to take this apart, which we're not going to do. Literally, I want to start with the thing at the beginning, which is whatever we assume to be obvious. And then he's got this list of things in this piece: our emotional state, the purpose of an event, the location of a stapler. And then later it goes on how we feel about one another, what our views are on certain public matters. We must teach ourselves to assume that whatever it is, it's not actually explicit, it's not obvious, and therefore must be stated out loud if we're to be understood. And then everything else sort of that follows in this thing is addressing all of the things we do that get in the way, like our emotional demands that somebody know me. If you knew me as well, if you were the friend, Lizzie, that I thought you were, you'd know this about me, and that sort of demand that I place. And there's lots to unpack there about how there are our sort of relational entanglements with one another and all those kind of things. But I think that the idea that what's most obvious to us is generally not obvious to other people, and in fact, they're often making a totally different and wrong assumption, and the assumption that they're making is also different from the one you wrongly assume they are making, is absolute genius. Because of course, there's a way in which, of course, we want to belong with one another and we want to get along with one another and we don't want to feel on the outside and we don't want to hurt one another. Like us humans, we don't. We want to say, please take care of yourself. Please be okay. And we want to know that other people feel that way about us. And we know that when we make the implicit explicit, the risk that we bear is that we almost certainly, actually, given what Jonah's saying, we'll almost certainly find out that whatever it was that we thought was going on with another person is going to be different from what we thought it was. And it seems to me that we avoid it out of fear. Like, I really know this to be true. If I'm worried about what you think about something and I'm imagining all the things I think you think about something, or maybe that you think about me, and then I can carry all of my imaginings about what's implicit in you in me as if they were like obvious. And I really don't want to hear them, because if I did hear them, everything I thought about us is going to get shaken and I'm not going to feel safe anymore. So we get into the habit of keeping the insides hidden. But it's also true the other way around, which is that all the time that I'm walking around imagining that I know what you think about what I think about and what you think about me, I'm also denying the opportunity of finding out all the ways in which we share commitments and values and cares and affection for one another. And with that, all of it is hidden. And this line, Lizzie, has so got me, that the assumption I make about you, about what you assume, is also going to be wrong. When we're not making the implicit explicit, actually what I'm doing is I'm living in a relationship with you, which actually isn't the relationship with you. It's just my imagining of what the relationship, and you're living in a relationship with me that isn't the relationship with me. But it's really tender to start to talk, because it brings up all of the, well, you should have known. You should know where the stapler is. You should know what this event is for. You should know that I love you. You should know that. So this is such a call for us. This is such a call for us finding out that the world is being made by all of this, whether we talk about it or not. And we better talk about it so that we have a chance to make the world we actually want to live in, not the world we're imagining and fearing.
Gosh, it's so good. There's so much in it. And I agree with you, Justin, about the joy of it. And I think it's a little bit like, you know, when you go to like a really good comedy stand-up thing, and somebody brings something out of the background into the foreground about the way we're all relating to each other or how things go in the world that no one ever really says. I think it has that quality for me. And it's reminding me of all the times I say to my husband, well, I'm not going to explain that. You should know that already. And that's what's making me laugh. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so terrible. Oh my gosh. And all the assumptions that I make and all the assumptions that get made about me. And so anyway, it's making me laugh because it's revealing things to me. And I've also been thinking when you were reading and talking, Justin, about in order to be able to do this, first of all, we have to have some relationship with ourselves that we even know what our implicit is. And then we have to care about the other person enough to do the work of putting language to that thing and then giving it to you so that you can understand. Like, it's quite a lot of work involved in this, inner work and then practical language work. And I know sometimes it's very difficult these days for me to actually articulate what's going on inside me. Like, things get very complicated and very complex, a little bit like when you try and describe a dream and it's like, oh, I know what went on, but like, the language is not going to ever do that thing justice. I increasingly feel like that about my inner world as well, like the complexity that exists in here. And sometimes I give up. Sometimes I think I can't share that because I don't understand what language goes with that. Like, I can't do it. So sometimes my implicit is pretty complex as well, that I kind of can't get it out. And yet it really matters to try. So what I'm really valuing as well, though, is the kind of the space and the time to this Marianne Woodman quote, this really wonderful woman, Marianne Woodman. She did all kinds of work in Jungian realms, Jungian psychotherapy and psychology. And she said, if we don't slow the conversation down to the pace of our hearts, we probably won't ever understand. And that keeps coming back to me in all the conversations I'm having, because that's the kind of pace that we really do need in order to find the space to be able to make the implicit explicit. And if we're not facilitating that for one another, we don't really have a chance of doing this. So just like you said at the beginning, this is going to be unhurried, very unhurried, you said. And to me, hurrying is like one of the implicit demands of our culture. It's like, get on with things, hurry up, get it done, all of that stuff. And that exists in my body. And I know I have so much impatience around this too. Like, the reason I say to you, well, you should know that already, is partly born out of my impatience. I don't want to have to spend hours telling you. I want you to know already. And of course you don't know already, because you couldn't know already, because I haven't told you and I haven't demonstrated it in some way, or I haven't written it down or whatever. And yet I think it's my impatience that says you should already know and I shouldn't have to spend any time on this. And I'm really guilty of that in my relationships. And all of the times I'm invited to slow down and have a conversation in an unhurried way, especially when it's complex, which basically most things are quite complex. If we get into things, there's complexity lying everywhere. We need time and we need to slow down. And of course, that's not very economically efficient. You know, we're not probably making a load of money while we're slowing down and talking to each other about complex world events. But we have to do it, and it's really important. And I feel like this is revealing just how much we must dedicate ourselves to doing this, so that we don't have this constant, as Jonah's saying, resentment, misunderstanding, conflict, and harm happening. And of course, the vast majority of the time, we're not looking to harm one another. And our intention to love and our intention to be together and intention to be in relationship is so easily undermined by us not doing this work. And I love what he says about when he kind of makes the, what I would say are kind of, for me, quite kind of young and childlike complaints. Why should I have to make something explicit and you haven't even bothered to ask me? I feel like a teenager, or a kind of my 8-year-old self being like, well, you didn't do that, so I'm going to do this. And then when he answers the question, well, wouldn't greater understanding be a positive outcome? It's like my kind of adult wise self comes in and goes, well, yes, that's actually what I want. So what I'm appreciating is he puts the kind of the child parts of me right next to the adult parts of me in the way that he writes and says this. And that helps me be in conversation and notice what the qualities of the more childish parts are, the less mature parts are, right next to the kind of an adult voice of course my mature self wants that. And this part of the moral part that he gets to as well. So many times, Justin, I'm in situations where I'm literally like, I'm not going to do that work of telling you what it's like to be a woman in the world. I'm not going to do that work telling you what it's like to be a mom of children in the world. I'm not going to do that, because really, how can you not know? And yet, it is worth it. It is worth debasing myself, as he says. It is worth getting into the conversation, because it would enable greater understanding if I could have the patience and the breath and the pace to just say, well, actually, this is what I have to do. This is how much work I have to do to leave my house. Would you like me to tell you what has to happen? And that goes so unsaid in the world. And actually, whenever I meet or see new mums, either out in the world or at work or whatever I'm doing, I always say, like, congratulations on having your hair washed and looking like you got your life a bit together, because I know what's just gone on there. And then we have the great humorous conversation about that. And it really matters for us all to acknowledge the implicit that we do know in one another as well. So there's plenty of implicit that I can tell that I share with somebody lots of the time. And to be honest about that is an act of leadership in a way. Like, if I can say, this is what it took me to get out of the house this morning, and someone goes, oh my gosh, yes, me too. There's such relief in it to feel like we're not the only one with some kind of crazy, complex, implicit world. And when someone else makes it explicit, there's relief. There's relief for us all. So I can also sense the kind of collective relief in this too, that if we do this practice and if we come into relationship in this way as consciously and as best and we can and practice this, of course we'd be more connected, which is all what we're all longing for anyway. And we can do something about it. And that's what Jonah's inviting into.
Yeah. I can feel in me, Lizzie, the wish to talk about 500 different examples of this, you know, because there's so much richness in every level of this. But actually, what I want to say now in response to what you said is to really appreciate Jonah's pragmatism. So he points to all of the drama in us. Of course, there's all of that drama. In fact, that drama is quite good to make explicit, you know, to say, there is a part of me, Lizzie, that feels like you ought to know this about me and feels really pained that you don't. Like, getting to that level of explicitness, maybe that's a sort of more advanced thing that we get to. But behind all of the drama and all of the demands that we be the ones who's right, who are right, you know, I'm the one who's right, you should know this about me, and you shouldn't put me through this morality test, and you should know where the stapler is, and you should know why I've called this event, and you should know what it took to get out the door. Behind all of that is a very needy hurt something in us that just wants to know that we're okay and that we belong. And we could go along with that, but actually that really does lead to this point where he says about the harms and resentment, misunderstanding, conflict and harm. It really does lead to harms on all kinds of scales. So harms in our intimate relationships and in our working relationships, and harms on the scale of the world. If I take up a position that, of course, I'm right, and you should know all the ways that in which I'm right, and I won't talk and listen to you because you're wrong, and I don't want to go through your morality test, we end up in the situation we are in right now in the world, where we polarize into binaries of right and wrong, good and evil, in and out. And we don't talk to one another. So I think it's on a world scale this really matters as much as it matters about how we navigate loading the dishwasher, which we've talked about, or as you said, sharing the real experience of being a woman or a man or a parent or a, you know, Jewish person, or a, you know, I'm thinking about the things that are on my mind at the moment. So Jonah's question is a pragmatic one, which is, and pragmatism requires us to be really grown up. Because we have to say, where does this lead? Like, it's the best question. Where does this stance that I'm taking lead? Where does daring to feel the discomfort of saying to you, Lizzie, here's what I feel, which might be all the ways I love you, and it might be all the ways that I need something from you, or it might be whatever it is. Or it might be telling you again the thing that I've told you 50 times that you can't remember, but I need to tell you again, because you, the fact that you can't remember it means it's not explicit now.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, if when we look at it, we say that it, as Jonah keeps on pointing out, that this could lead to an outcome, a positive outcome of more understanding between us and more possibility between us and more relationship between us and more all of that, then it is incumbent upon us to learn how to do it, because pragmatism is what works in the world, what creates a better world for us, not what feeds my emotional drama and my, you know, feeds my wounding and makes me feel superior or gives me my self-esteem. So none of those things matter as much as what it takes to talk with one another in a way that actually makes things better for all of us. Better. And that's where, and it's a big ask, because I think a lot of us, I definitely have parts of me like this, for sure, you know, the sort of teenage parts that actually would much prefer to be in resentment at all the things that the people who are close to me don't understand about me and should, and all my imaginings about, and then all my judgments and all. It feels very good and terrible all at the same time to be in that emotional drama.
Yeah.
But it leads nowhere. I mean, it really leads nowhere, and we can do something about it. That's what is important about this. And that is where the thing about slowing down really matters. Because, you know, you were talking about the culture of going fast and getting things done and what makes money and all of those kind of things. I think it's probably true if you look at a scale of like an hour, what should we spend this hour doing? You know, what will make the most money in the next hour? We might not sit making the implicit explicit. But if we look at the course of 6 months or a year or 10 years, for sure, our being brave enough to do this greatly enables our capacity to be up to all the things that humans want to and need to be up to, from being in intimate partnerships to raising families to building businesses to changing politics to making community. It all depends upon this, and we have to get over our reactive, graspy, needy, I got to have this thing met in me right now, otherwise I'm not prepared to do it. That part of us, we have to find a way to gently, or maybe sometimes quite strongly, have those parts step back enough that the real me and the real you can talk, and we can do this. We can work together on what will create the kind of relationships upon which the world can be built, not the kind of relationships upon which the world falls apart.
Yeah, you're talking, Justin, is having me get very close to this feeling of riskiness of doing all of this. Because I could reveal my implicit to you, and that implicit is not, it can't sit with your implicit or something. And I'm wondering about how much fear we all have that that might be true. And, you know, I remember early on telling my husband that I loved him. And he was like, what? You can't say that to me at this stage. You know, we'd only just met or something. I was just didn't really care about anything at the time. And I thought, well, I've just got to be honest. And my implicit was all over the shop. And I remember him being very taken aback and kind of thinking there was something a bit wrong with me and that I shouldn't have said it. And And I remember just thinking, but I'm just being truthful. That's what I'm experiencing right now. Like there was no demand in it. I was just telling him that I had feelings of love that were on the inside that he couldn't have known if I didn't tell him. And I'm just feeling the riskiness of doing that and the kind of, I guess, the faith that we have to have in one another and also life itself, that it's okay if things end as well. You know, if my implicit is not an implicit that can sit with yours, it might end, but it also might not. Some new ground might be gained. We might enter into territory that is where we never even thought that we could get to. And one of the things I'm noticing in this conversation, Justin, is that all of the people in my life who, when they reveal their implicit to me, and I think, goodness gracious, I could never have predicted that that's what you were going to say or any human was going to say, those people are the most kind of compelling to me. So I think there's something in this. It's not only, it not only creates relationship to know one another's implicit, but it makes life creative. I can feel the creativity in it. To sit for enough time for more of your implicit to be revealed to me as explicit feels like what is interesting about being a human being. And because also I'm pretty, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but what I think and how I think is pretty samey to me, because I'm in here all the time. So then when I get to understand, feel, sense into your world, because you're revealing your implicit to me, I feel expanded. I feel life is being given to me, like more life is experienceable because of what you've said to me. So when I'm open to you changing me by what you say, I think, ooh, this is way more interesting than my old thoughts about that thing that I had been thinking. And I feel like it's life force or something. So the more I open to you and the more I get curious and have you pave the way to different thinking happening in me, different understanding, different kind of compassion or different kind of grasping of some concept or some thought, I feel given to. Like it's gifting to me is how I feel. And I feel like that openness and that kind of curiosity, I suppose, really leads to this, I think, a longing I deeply have, which is to experience everything I kind of came here as a human to experience. And without you and 100 million other people telling me things and me receiving them, it's pretty boring in here. I mean, it's familiar. And I know it already. And of course, I can sit with myself and new things arise. But if I'm really honest with myself, all of my inspiredness is because I listen to other people and get curious about other people's lives and feel into other people's realities and hopefully be a safe enough space for people to reveal things to me and ask enough questions. And that feels like, well, what else is life other than that process?
Yeah, so beautiful, Lizzie. As the other part of this invitation that Jonah's making to us. And it's time for us to end, but I'll end with one tiny thought, which is you said something quickly that is really huge, and I just want to honor and then just bring back into the center, because it might be something for us to think about and something for all of you who are with us who are listening to think about. That one of the reasons we don't make our implicit explicit because we're frightened that things will fall apart if we do. And you said, maybe things have to fall apart sometimes. And that I agree, that's part of our, because we are so frightened about things ending, we'll pretend alongside one another in this repetitive inner world that never changes rather than encounter the possibility that things might end. And there is the other part to it, which is sometimes we talk and it feels like everything's going to end. And we find that underneath all of that is a deeper commitment that we want to have towards one another.
Mm-hmm.
That what we thought would be an ending is actually an invitation to a deepening, where we find that there's some deeper commitment that we share that goes far beyond whether I've told you 500 times how I like the dishwasher loaded and you can't remember and don't do it. And so now we have to go our separate ways. Maybe we find out that we're deeply committed to something else, like in a relationship being alongside the life that you are, in this friendship being two lives alongside one another with all of the differences. And so I'm so glad you brought in the possibility of the death of things. Sometimes things die and sometimes they are enlivened because we're able to encounter the death. And this is also about not complaining when next time you ask me where the stapler is and just telling you where the stapler is. You know, that's what's so good about this conversation is it's the most day-to-day and it's also the biggest. And maybe that's because it's about something so foundational about being a person.
Mm. Also, that assumes I know where the stapler is, by the way, which I don't.
Yeah, right. But this foundational thing about a person that we know only what's in us. We actually don't know anything about what's in another person, even when we think we do. We don't really. And so then what? So then what? Oh my goodness. What a conversation. I feel enlivened and enfeistened and deepened and enhopened and filled with also with a sense of possibility. So much we can improve about our world if we're willing to go this way. And thank you to you, Lizzie, for the kind of intelligence and clarity and depth and courage and creativity you bring to this very rich conversation. And thank you to Jonah for saying all of this that has then enabled us to say all of this. And thank you to all of you who are with us. Please, please, please feel very welcome to tell other people who you think might benefit from this conversation, because we know that this conversation for some people is a gift. And so we really encourage you. It's like a free gift you can give to other people. You don't even have to do anything apart from tell them where to find us.
Yes.
And we will be so glad to keep on expanding the circles of conversation around this. And we're going to stop here, and all being well, we will be back next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.